The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
All right, welcome to a brand new week, and oh my goodness. It just goes from crazy to absolutely off the wall insane. On Friday, after we got off the air, the show ended, I thought, oh, I forgot to say something, because it seems like every Friday after the show ends at 6 o'clock Eastern, some big earth-shattering story breaks. Well, this time it didn't happen on Friday. Friday night came and went. We knew Saturday was coming, where Trump was going to nominate Amy Coney Barrett to the Supreme Court. I mean, could he have picked anybody that's more of a polar opposite from Ruth Bader Ginsburg? And to make things even worse, those cretins on the right are putting out memes of Amy Coney Barrett, ACB, they're calling her, and they're making up t-shirts stealing the Notorious and the Crown from RGB and putting them on this woman with the initials, what was it, ACB. She is not notorious. She's the other kind of notorious. God damn it. You know, it's bad enough they're stealing her seat, but they want to steal her, you know, awesomeness, the branding that she earned. They just want to give it to this woman who belongs to some creepy sect of the Catholic Church. Look, be Catholic. I don't care. If you want to have your creepy religion, that's all well and good. But when you get involved in some kind of cult that's an offshoot of the religion, sorry, I've got a problem with that. And what you do in the privacy of your own home is one thing, but when you take it into the halls of the Supreme Court, well, we've got a little issue here. So that happened, and I thought, all right, well, I need to deal with this crap on Monday, but we'll get there. And then we make it through the weekend until Sunday night. And I'll never forget, I was in the living room doing something. I don't know what. I've been, you know, trying to unplug from the, you know, insanity that is politics and the craziness of life, the craziness of this world on weekends. I try to, you know, whether I'm cooking, because I've been doing a lot of that lately, or doing my watercolors or drawing or doing something to escape from this madness, which I think is really important, especially as we get closer to Election Day and the insanity is ratcheted up, you know, to the nth degree. But I was in the living room doing something and I hear David from the other room go, New York Times got Trump's taxes. Oh, boy. All right. So I already had a busy show booked for today. So but the two guests we have on today can speak to all of the insanity. So I'll tell you what, why don't we start with our first guest, knowing that Trump was going to nominate Amy Coney Barrett to the Supreme Court. Just God, what a travesty that is. I thought, who better to talk about someone who wants to bring her religion into my government? You know, it's like the old Reese's commercials. Don't put your peanut butter in my chocolate. But in that case, it came up with something even better. Oh, my God. Chocolate and peanut butter together. You can't go wrong there. But when you mix religion, especially, well, all religion, I think, is a little weird. But when you mix in a creepy sect of the Catholic Church with a Supreme Court, nothing can, you know, something's going to go terribly wrong there. And we know that's the case with Amy Coney Barrett. So I thought, who better to talk to than my old friendly acquaintance, Reverend Barry Lynn. Barry Lynn served as the executive director of Americans United for Separation of Church and State for 25 years, from 1992 to 2017. On top of that, he is an ordained minister in the United Church of Christ, and he is an attorney. He graduated from Georgetown Law School. and is a very strong advocate for separation of church and state. He's even got a new book in the works called You Don't Know Me, but you might have heard of some of the people I've met. Anyway, Barry Lynn has hosted radio shows from Air America and on, and he's busy with this new book and talking to people like me during his retirement. So anyway, as Amy Coney Barrett is Trump's nominee to replace Ruth Bader Ginsburg on the Supreme Court, I'm still so disgusted. I called on Barry and I wanted to ask him, well, about Amy Coney Barrett and find out, you know, basically what went through Barry's mind when he heard that Ruth Bader Ginsburg had died.
When this news came out on last Friday, it was truly horrifying. And I think the accolades, everyone is justified except Donald Trump's, who, of course, had no idea who she was, probably, except that she didn't like the things he stood for. But I do think we spent a week praising her. And I have the feeling Ruth Bader Ginsburg would say, thanks for the praise. Now get on and organize and do something extraordinary to prevent my replacement from being announced right now.
Exactly. And then, you know, we knew it, because Donald Trump has told us since before he got elected who he would choose, who he would nominate to the Supreme Court, given the chance. And then when it became apparent, he was going to choose Amy Coney Barrett as his pick to replace Ruth Bader Ginsburg. I don't know about you, but my stomach dropped. Your thoughts on Amy Coney Barrett?
I mean, she is not just a conventional conservative, as you probably know. I mean, I spent a lot of time, including on radio, with conservatives, but at least they had some principle and they told the truth most of the time. But this woman is really on the judicial fringes. She's so close to the edge of the cliff, she could fall off at any moment. So the risks are so enormous here. And I was horrified that most of the media over the weekend said, well, Mitch McConnell has the power, he has the votes, there's nothing the Democrats can do. But of course, there are plenty of things, even though we don't have a filibuster anymore, that Democrats can do. And long ago, I used to do these things. I'd work with, and here are just two simple ones.
Okay.
One, complain about, insist on unanimous consent and say, no, we're not going to do anything by unanimous consent. When they ask unanimous consent to read the day's proceedings, every time it's always done by unanimous consent, you don't want to read it, object to that and do it. But more importantly is a constitutional provision in Article 5 that requires all Senate business to be conducted with a quorum.
Mm-hmm.
A quorum, as I understand the rules of the Senate, cannot be changed. It is 51 people.
So you're saying they need to follow every regulation, every Senate rule. And when they do call for unanimous consent for the most basic things, which is how they do a lot of business, do not give in to that. Say, no, we want a roll call vote on every single thing. They could also say, we want to read every word of any legislation allowed on the Senate floor before it comes up for a vote. Right?
Three times. The greatest person who understood how to do filibusters for good reasons and all these other procedural things was Lowell Weicker. When he was a Republican senator in Connecticut, he was defeated by Jill Lieberman, who sadly and pathetically has now announced he's supporting Susan Collins in the Senate seat in Maine because he says, I'm more interested in my country than I am in my party.
What?
Yes, I'm more interested in my country than I am in my party.
No, yeah, I heard it, but it doesn't make any sense.
And I was horrified this morning to learn that one of the senators I really like, Dick Durbin of Illinois, said, well, you know, there's these suggestions about quorum calls. And
yeah,
it would delay things for a few hours, maybe a day or two. That's baloney.
Well, every second counts right now. And you know what? If you can delay it by a few hours, terrific. I also am kind of perturbed to see Nancy Pelosi saying, well, the continuing resolution, we're going to go ahead with that. Really? Because if the shoe was on the other foot, you know that the Republicans would shut the whole thing down. And I'm sorry, we've been through a few government shutdowns before and we've survived. A government shutdown might be an inconvenience for a little while. You know, it would cause some hardships for a while. But what would seating Amy Coney Barrett on the Supreme Court cause us? Not for just a little while, but for a generation at least to come.
Absolutely. And of course, there are a lot of people who say, well, when if the Democrats flip the Senate, then we can expand the size of the court, which is a good idea. And we can allow statehood for Puerto Rico and for the District of Columbia. Right. That will be four reliably Democratic senators. But even that is proven controversial. So that we have people like Senator Coons in Delaware who said, well, he would be against expanding the court.
And this Joe Manchin and stuff. Others.
Exactly. This is the only people who say, well, it really doesn't matter. It's like the people on the left, of whom I think I'm as far to the left as you can get, who say, well, there's no difference really between the corporate Democrat and Joe Biden and Donald Trump. That is, to put a polite word here, that is bullshit. Mm-hmm. That you can say if you are a pretty privileged person. But if you're trying to figure out how to pay the rent next week, there's a huge difference, and we ought to respect that. And Bernie, I love Bernie Sanders. I supported him in the primaries. But if he doesn't get on the bandwagon of doing something procedurally to stop this, all of the arguments in the world, and I'm sure we'll get to some of them, about what's wrong with Amy Barrett's views on the law, they're not going to persuade very many senators. I don't think even the disclosures last night from the New York Times about how impoverished he is going to change the minds of senators on this issue. So we find a corrupt, lying, deceitful tax evader appointing for a lifetime position a woman on the fringes of judicial conduct.
That's where we are. Welcome to 2020. Barry Lynn is our guest. And so, Barry, I mean, you spent 25 years as executive director of Americans United for Separation of Church and State. My biggest problem with Amy Coney Barrett is not the fact that she's, and I'm doing air quotes for those just listening to an audio broadcast of this, religious. It's not that she's, quote, air quote, Catholic, because there's a lot of Catholics out there. Joe Biden is a Catholic. He still understands, although he's not in favor of abortion, is in favor of a woman's right to choose what happens with her body. He doesn't let his religion overrule his civic duty, his responsibilities. Amy Coney Barrett may be a Catholic, but it's not her Catholicism that has frightened people, that has gotten us a little on edge. It's the fact that she belongs to a sect. And apparently the sect that she belongs to is something called People of Praise. Right. So it's not just straight up Catholicism, which has its own problems. But this is a sect, maybe somewhat related to Catholicism, but it's not your rank and file, you know, Catholic, God-fearing person. They have a very strict, and to quote Dianne Feinstein, dogma about them. And maybe that's the wrong word to use. But when you put the male above the woman, saying he has authority. And yes, in People of Praise, the women were called handmaids and the men were the heads, as in head of family. So she believes in succumbing or acquiescing to her husband's judgment. What does this mean as a Supreme Court justice? Is she going to bring her cases home and let her husband weigh in on them before she makes a decision?
That's interesting. First of all, the religion question, I mean, Dianne Feinstein's kind of clunky use of the word dogma when Amy Barrett was on the consideration for the Seventh Circuit a few years ago. Mm-hmm. It was clunky, and it was everybody hated it, the right wingers. But I remember when we would provide, when I was with the ACLU or when I was with Americans United for 25 years, sample questions for Senate Democratic senators to ask. And we would say, can you distinguish your religious beliefs from your duties as a federal judge on the Supreme Court? That question alone became so toxic that Democrats wouldn't even ask it. And I remember, you know, I used to go on Bill O'Reilly's show a lot.
Oh, God. Okay.
And I'd go on. I know it's horrible.
I don't know how, but yeah.
And every time that this would come up, I mean, I'd be on and he'd go, well, this is obviously anti-religious bigotry. How is it anti-religious bigotry to simply ask the question? Now, it would be nice if somebody every once in a while would say, you know, in all candor, you say you can distinguish, but I don't really believe that. But that's nobody would do that, because that would be calling a possible Supreme Court justice a liar.
Right.
But here's a question. You know, I have some familiarity with the Bible. And there is, of course, a line in the Bible that says that husband should be the head of the family as Christ is the head of the church. Here's a way to, I was just thinking of this morning. What if you said, because there are plenty of religious people on the Judiciary Committee. If somebody said, well, you know, my Holy Scripture is the Christian Bible, and then I quote what I just said to you, and then say, now, I don't take that literally, but Judge Barrett, do you take that seriously? And probe that question and show that it demonstrate that Democrats actually have some knowledge of religion, even of the Bible, but also a way to phrase that deserves an answer. Because then you're not saying it's wrong. You just say, well, I have a different interpretation of it, but I understand where you might be coming from. Clarify that.
Right.
And that's perfectly permissible. Whether Lindsey Graham would shut it up, I don't know. But it's one of these things, Nicole, that ought to be tried.
Yes. And it's a legitimate question. I mean, if you believe, as your religion dictates, that the man in the couple has authority and the woman shall, you know, I don't know, what's the word? Acquiesce to him? I'm not quite sure. I'm losing.
He's a servant.
Yes.
In the Christ is a servant.
Be subservient to the man. How does that manifest itself when you're sitting, you know, judging a case? What? Exactly. How does it manifest itself in your professional life? And I'm frankly surprised she's gotten this far. And now we're talking about seating somebody on the highest court in the land who lets religion guide her in so many aspects of her life. So it's not the fact that we're objecting to her religion, or I'll speak for myself. Fine if you want to be a religious person, but you have to be able to separate your religion from your responsibility of your job. And in this case, it's serving the American people sitting on the Supreme Court. I think it's a very legitimate question to ask.
You know, here's another question. On Saturday, there's some dispute about this. She has seven children, but I think only six of them were in the Rose Garden. None of them were wearing masks.
None of them.
Her husband was not wearing a mask. Nope. She was not wearing a mask, even when she was just seated. Behind her, a sea of other people not wearing masks. And, you know, I'm not a huge social media person. I don't post a lot of things, but I posted this question yesterday. I said, doesn't it indicate that if you take your children to an event where they're not wearing masks and nobody else is wearing masks, doesn't that make you a bad mother? Then I get criticized, a bad parent.
Yes.
You're taking your children and putting them at risk.
Yes.
It's fundamental. This is not the kind of thing like where you criticize someone's parenting because they allow the kids to eat too much Halloween candy, or they allow people to watch R-rated movies on the video. These are huge. This is life or death. This is putting your children at risk of them dying.
Yes.
That's right. Irresponsible. And that ought to be raised. What's wrong with saying, I noticed that you were not wearing a mask and your husband wasn't and the children weren't. And didn't you consider that possibly dangerous? That's a fair question. And very few people remember this. But on the Seventh Circuit, she actually voted to overturn a policy in Illinois that limited the number of people at social gatherings. It originally included churches. And she effectively said, well, that's unconstitutional.
Oh, my God.
Churches. So we know what her personal conduct is, and we know what her policies as a judge in this matter are. Why is that not right for consideration, questioning?
It should be. And then here's the next question. There are some people advocating for the Democrats to completely boycott these confirmation hearings. And I could argue either side of it. That's part of the problem. You know, I can play devil's advocate. If they don't, then it's just going to be a propaganda session where she gets to spout her stuff and there's nobody challenging her. So, Barry Lynn, what do you think? Should the Democrats participate in this farce?
Yeah, I think they should. I also noticed that some Richard Blumenthal from Connecticut said he's not going to meet with her.
Right.
Well, you know, I'm sure she's got seven kids. She doesn't need to meet with every senator. She's probably happy not to. That's even dumber than not participating in it. And by the way, eating up time is important in these committee meetings.
Yep.
And one of the things, you know, Chuck Schumer is not on my highest list of great politicians, but he has allowed so many federal judges to take office by not spending the time to challenge them.
There is no
federal appeals court judge who is of any real worth who shouldn't have been had a talkathon. You can't filibuster. That was a mistake.
Yep.
But you have to take the time.
They green stamped another batch of these judicial nominees when they should be holding up each and every one of them.
Of course they should. And again, this is not extraordinary, except it's extraordinary if the people you're talking about have no spine.
Right.
But it's not extraordinary. It's the rules. It's following the rules. And they shouldn't be embarrassed to do that.
So, Barry Lynn, here we are. Do you now I'm going to ask you to put on your fortune teller hat.
Yeah.
Are the Democrats going to be able to stop this from happening?
I see no evidence that they are.
Me either.
And again, this is not a person. Neil Gorsuch, I had followed him a lot because he was doing a lot of decisions, bad church state decisions when he was on the appeals court. But at least he's a smart person. He's not like Brett, a drunk would-be rapist Kavanaugh.
I like being.
He's a hack. Mm. Kavanaugh's a hack.
Yeah.
But there are people on that list, including Amy Barrett, who are so far gone. And let me give you, if I can, one or two examples. She does not believe in the doctrine of stare decisis, to stand by things decided. I don't know much Latin, but I did go to law school, so I learned that.
Right.
This is the idea that once something is established, it's the law. You don't change it on a whim.
Right, it's settled law, like Roe v. Wade, perhaps.
Yeah, well, some people who are conservatives say that's settled law.
Yep.
She does not say that. She does not say that, and in fact has written and has said that when there is a dispute, when a decision comes down that is controversial, that's the standard, then it can be revisited, and stare decisis does not hold. So even Roe versus Wade, to say nothing of all of the other decisions, if Roe versus Wade falls, some of my friends say, well, at least the states will be able to maintain a woman's right to choose. But that's not entirely clear either. Roe versus Wade is based on the idea, two ideas. One, fetuses are not persons under the Constitution. And second, that there is an assumed right to privacy. And the right to privacy, famously criticized as coming from the penumbra of other constitutional provisions. But the things that come from that penumbra before Roe versus Wade, contraceptive use. People forget that in the 1960s, it was illegal to use contraceptives in the state of Connecticut for married couples. Married couples. And this is part of the I don't know if you know or have had on your show Susan Page, who wrote this a book about about a decade ago about the religious rights general interest, not just in banning abortion, but in banning contraceptives. Mm-hmm. Banning contraceptives. They could go back and say, if there's no right to privacy, there's no right to privacy to obtain contraceptives either. My friend Bill Baird, of course, in 1972, was arrested in Boston, Massachusetts, for giving a speech at Boston University and passing out some condoms. He was arrested. He was prosecuted, and he went to the Supreme Court. And that's the case that resolved that you have a constitutional privacy right as a non-married person to obtain contraceptives. This is not the Dark Ages. This was in 1972, 1 year before Roe versus Wade.
Wow. Yeah. God, there are so many questions and there's so many different directions we could go in. Right. But right now I need to end this. Barry Lynn, it's great to talk to you, but I've got Ellie Mastal coming up. It's a very busy Monday. Oh, it is. And hold on. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Hold on. Hold on. Hold on. Ah. Talk about a technical issue. Why do I have no sound? Hold on. You might hear me, but I'm not hearing me, and that's not okay. So bear with me 1 second. Again, that's Barry Lynn of why do I have no audio coming at me? Ah, I hate it when that happens. Maybe this is the reason. Did that fix it? That didn't fix it either. Oh, I see what happened. Okay, now I've got audio back. Hopefully everything is okay. Anyway, Barry Lynn, former executive director of Americans United for Separation of Church and State, and with a book coming out soon, we'll have him back on when I have more time to talk. It is just a few minutes before the bottom of the hour. Ellie Mastal is going to join us in just a couple of minutes. My ballot just arrived. I'm so excited. Broward County, Florida ballot. We'll be filling this out over dinner. We'll be hand driving it back to the supervisor of elections office. I'll tell you what, while we're waiting for Ellie Mastal, how about a quick funny song? Oh, you know what? We got to say progressive choice. This is what I get for trying to rush through things. Progressive talk. People, progressive voices, we're going to take a quick break and come back with Ellie Mastal next. Okay, don't go away. We'll be right back. Oh boy, best laid plans and all that stuff. For everyone else, let's do a little bit of a funny, a palate cleanser, as it were, sort of like a sorbet. This is a new one from our friends at Founder Sing. And this time, for those not watching video, the vocal is provided by Sting. Enjoy. It's Vaccine. Oops. It's called Vaccine. Here we go.
I love the way you heal us from polio and smallpox. That snake oil salesman does shady deals. He don't care, he's just a bully boy. So really like the grown up who doesn't make us throw up. When intelligence comes back again, you'll have your day. Vaccine. Neutralize a virus that fear divides. Vaccine. Can you make these United States unite? We just have to wait for the right.
The Nicole Sandler Show.
The Nicole Sandler Show
on the Progressive Voices Network.
It is, and we're back. And I'm thrilled to welcome back to the show Ellie Mistal. Hey, Ellie.
Hi, Nicole. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm, you know, totally depressed and tired. I haven't really stopped working since RBG passed away.
Yeah, well, tell me about it. Oh, my. Well, you haven't stopped working for longer than that. I mean, I know you were taking a vacation when something happened. It seemed every week it's another, you know, another shoe drops. There's an octopus out there running around without shoes on because all those shoes keep dropping. Right.
And you just hope that one of these shoes will matter. I mean, that's all you can hope for. The Trump people are so just locked into their cult that they just refuse to see the evidence right in front of their face. And that can get very frustrating.
Yes, it can. Well, Ellie Mistal is the justice correspondent for The Nation. He covers the courts, the criminal justice system, politics. And, you know, when it became apparent that, RBG had died, obviously, and then that Trump wasn't even going to wait for her to be buried before he went and named her replacement. I thought, who would I like to talk to about this? And obviously, Ellie Mistal. I always love talking with you. And then he goes ahead and picks probably the most polar opposite person of Ruth Bader Ginsburg that he could find, who's in contention for a seat on the Supreme Court. And to make it's insult to injury and then some. And now they're making T-shirts that say the notorious ACB. Are they kidding? What the hell?
It's just disrespectful. I mean they don't care, but like, yeah, it's you know, people forget Barack Obama waited a month after Antonin Scalia died before naming Merrick Garland, who was then ignored right by the Republican Party. And that's really where I start with Amy Coney Barrett. There is no nominee that would be acceptable to me in this situation, given how the Republicans treated Merrick Garland. I don't care if Trump nominated Atticus Finch, all right? I do not think we should have a nominee during an election that has already started. I think this is a messaging thing that the Democrats keep messing up for some reason. They say, like, we shouldn't have one so close to an election. No, no, no. The election is happening now. People are voting now.
Yeah.
So pushing forward a nominee in these circumstances is highly inappropriate. So I start there. There's nobody that's okay right now. In the constellation of people that he could have picked for this illegitimate appointment, yes, Amy Coney Barrett is among the worst possible nominees because she is so right-wing. I will go back to Barack Obama again, and I say this from the perspective of a person who disagreed with him at the time. Mm-hmm. But when Obama nominated Garland, what he was trying to do was find a centrist, broadly acceptable jurist who could attract a certain level of moderate Republican support, right?
Right.
Merrick Garland was never the jurist that was going to impress Mitch McConnell, but he was supposed to be the jurist that was going to make, let's say, John McCain break with his party. Let's say Lindsey Graham, the old Lindsey Graham, right, the Lindsey Graham 1.0.
The pre-picture is Lindsey Graham, because there have got to be photos of him somewhere. That's all I can think.
right?
Yes, exactly, right? Mm-hmm. Trump, in contrast, as opposed to picking kind of a broadly, generally, you know, centrist, moderate Republican, Trump has found one of the most extreme hard right judges available on the bench and promoted her for this position.
It is astounding. And you, Ellie Mastal, you know, a lot of people have talked about her religion, as I was talking about in the previous half hour. It's not her religion that bothers me. It's the creepy offshoot of the religion that bothers me, in addition to her very right-wing tendencies. But that goes with this, what are they called? People of prayer?
People of praise.
People of praise.
I don't call it a cult. Experts who study cults call it a cult.
Right.
Whatever. I could live, and this makes me a little bit different, mm-hmm. than some Democrats. I could live, or at least I could imagine living, with a justice that had devout Catholic beliefs and apply those devout Catholic beliefs to the law.
Really?
I don't think that's ideal. I don't think that's the world that we should live in. I think there should be separation of church and state. But if you're going to come down the mountain, no pun intended, with Catholic dogma, mm-hmm. and apply that to the law, I could live with that. What I can't live with is Catholic hypocrisy. Mm-hmm. And that is what Amy Coney Barrett stands for. So she wants to claim that she's, you know, following God's will and being all Catholic when it comes to whether or not a woman should have rights to her own body. She's happy to be Catholic then.
Right.
But when prisoners argue that they have been subjected to cruel and unusual punishment, when a police officer shoots shotgun shells into a crowded cafeteria, Amy Coney Barrett is not Catholic then. No, no, no. She says, and I quote, deliberate indifference to human life is not enough for the prisoners to have a constitutional argument. So she agreed that the cops in that situation were deliberately indifferent, again, her words, to human life, but that just wasn't enough to make it a legal thing.
Wow.
It's not Catholic to say that a person who is coming, who is trying to apply for immigration to this country, trying to apply for a green card to this country, should be denied one simply because that person might be lower income and might one day need public assistance.
Mm-hmm.
That's not Jesus's position. That's Amy Coney Barrett's position.
Right, which is very unchristian.
Right. When she was the lone judge to uphold Donald Trump's awful public charge rule, denying green card applications to people who might need public assistance in the future. Right. So that's what I'm talking about, Nicole. It's that base level hypocrisy that to me makes Amy Coney Barrett not only unacceptable as a jurist, but quite frankly, bad at her faith.
Yeah. Right.
If she wants to go there, and certainly an extreme version of Republican politics, and so many of these decisions that I've listed, she was the lone dissenter, which means that she was against even the main of her circuit, certainly, but she's outside the mainstream even within her own party.
It's astounding. And you make a really good point. And she's not alone in her hypocrisy, in her religious hypocrisy. It's like Christian Sharia law, where, you know, do as I tell you to do. But forget about the fact that I'm a Jew. I'm a woman of Jewish descent who happens to be an atheist. So as an atheist Jew, I'm more, quote, Christian than many of these people who you know, wear it proudly and keep, you know, keep it on their sleeve, who don't act Christian at all. They don't follow the teachings of Christ. I care about my neighbor. They don't seem to. But I do have a problem with someone regulating or sitting on the bench and ruling from a place of their Bible. Look, I had a problem with Marcy Kaptur, Democrat from Ohio, because she's very Catholic and anti-choice, and she brings that into her place of work. I'm sorry, when you're elected to represent the people who elect you, not practice your religion from the Congress or the bench, whichever the case may be.
I'm totally there. And the other thing, I mean, like, it's so easy to sublimate the choice argument into this kind of great moral battle between it's 50 years of Supreme Court precedent.
Settled law.
Radical you have to be to sit there as Amy Coney Barrett does and casually talk about how you're willing to throw away 50 years of Supreme Court precedent, that's just not what's done. All right. Mm-hmm. The last time a precedent as longstanding as Roe v. Wade was simply cast aside, you'd literally have to go back to the 50s when Brown v. Board of Ed overturned Plessy v. Ferguson, which is the case that allowed for segregation to happen in this country. So that's the level of shockingness it is for her to overturn Roe v. Wade precedent. And she wants to do it again and again and again, basically for any precedent she doesn't like that day.
Right.
Which is just not what you do. I say to young people all the time who don't always understand how the Supreme Court affects their lives, there is nothing that you could want as a young progressive that survives a 6-3 Supreme Court stacked with Republicans. And the reason why is because of this precedent throwing out that people like Amy Coney Barrett does. So, you know, I can talk about something, and I'm not going to get, don't worry, Nicole, I'm not going to get too much into it. You know, there's a term that floats around lawyers. It's called Chevron deference. What's Chevron deference? I'm not going to explain Chevron deference. Okay. The important thing to understand when you hear that term refers to whether or not the courts are supposed to listen to executive agencies like the EPA when the EPA tells you what needs to be regulated to make the air clean and the water drinkable, right? Mm-hmm. And that's a 30-year precedent in our country. Amy Coney Barrett wants to, along with Neil Gorsuch, by the way, wants to completely throw away that so-called Chevron deference. Why? To open the door to massive deregulation in our environmental laws.
Oh,
so you don't have to understand Chevron deference. You don't have to understand the Supreme Court. All you have to understand is that if you want strong climate change legislation, it cannot survive people like Neil Gorsuch, like Brett Kavanaugh, and like Amy Coney Barrett holding power on the Supreme Court. You won't get it through. You can pass your Green New Deal. You can pass your Medicare for All. You can pass your statehood for D.C. and Puerto Rico. The court will strike it down and strike it down and strike it down if they are allowed to wield power.
Okay, so the next question, the logical question, Ellie Mistal, is there any way to stop it?
Can't stop her. I've looked at the numbers. I can, even if you give me an array of stunts, basically, that gets you to the election.
Right.
What you can't do is give me an array of stunts that extends the time period to get you all the way to the inauguration.
Right, through the lame duck,
And Mitch McConnell has already indicated that he is willing to push Amy Coney Barrett through in the lame duck. Make no mistake, that would involve most likely Republican senators who have already lost, who have already been kicked out of office by their constituents, hanging on and voting for a Supreme Court justice who will have the ability to serve until the 2060s.
And right?
That's the level that Republicans are willing to go to take control of the court.
That throw us into a constitutional crisis? I mean, at that moment, shouldn't we all take to the streets? I know it's asking a lot of the American people to turn off the damn television and go out into the streets, but that's what we need to do, isn't it? Just lay down in the streets.
I mean, I think that we should be there already I can't get us to January 20th without massive kind of uprising.
Right.
What I can do is say that if the Democrats take back the Senate and take back the White House, then the thing to do is to expand the number of justices on the court. And I know Democrats are, for various reasons, afraid of this idea because we are afraid of our own shadow. And what will the Republicans do? It's not going to be worth what they're doing now.
They're going to like us.
Right.
Yeah.
What are the Republicans going to do? The Republicans are going to win. So if we want to win, one of the things that we can do, and I honestly argue is the only thing we can do, is expand the number of justices on the Supreme Court. The number of justices is not set by the Constitution. It has been changed 4 or 5 times in our history. It can be changed again. There are proposals to add 2 specifically for vengeance for Gorsuch and now Amy Coney Barrett. I prefer a plan that would expand the court by 10 because I think that has other reform benefits beyond just the vengeance. But whatever your number is, you add more justices to the Supreme Court. I know a lot of Democrats want to talk about court packing, term limits. I know there's a bill in Congress that's completely useless about term limits. And the reason why term limits are useless, not because I don't like them. I think
won't do anything now. It won't help us today.
Well, it's unconstitutional. It's just not constitutional. Like, the Constitution does not say how many justices need to be on the Supreme Court. It absolutely says that Supreme Court justices are allowed to serve for life. Now, I might think that there's a clever way to get around that, but guess what, Nicole? I ain't on the Supreme Court.
That's right. And Amy Coney Barrett,
don't think it's constitutional. Honestly, Democrats don't even know how much they lose that argument. As I read the tea leaves, I think there's only one vote for term limits being constitutional. I think it's just Stephen Breyer.
Wow.
He's the only one that's indicated even slightly that he might be interested in term limits. The rest of them have either been completely silent or have come out against it. So if you want term limits, the way you get term limits is expand the court. You've got maybe 9 justices who are against term limits now. You put 10 justices who are for term limits on the court, and guess what? 10-9, now you get your term limits.
Yeah.
I just emphasize, there is nothing that the Democrats want, that the Democrats think they can get, that progressives want, that progressives think they can get. There is nothing that survives a 6-3 Republican court. Nothing.
Right. No, we're so screwed if this goes through. And you just said, Ellie Mistal, there is no way to stop it. You can slow it down and maybe hold it off till after the election. But these people know no shame. These people, I mean, the Republicans, and they will push it through, her confirmation through, even if it takes the truest of lame ducks, where everybody's been voted out. Mitch McConnell's been voted out. You name it. They lost the majority, but they still have that lame duck time. So the slowing down, would you still say they should do that? I mean, I think they should tell them, screw you, you're going to do this. We're not playing ball with you. You want to keep the government open? Good luck passing a continuing resolution. There are those who say, oh, we can't do that. Nancy Pelosi says, oh, we can't stop that. We can't have another government shutdown. Really? Why not? Because I think the damage done to this nation by seating Amy Coney Barrett is a hell of a lot worse than it'll be by shutting down the government for a few weeks.
I mean, in general, Democrats never want to play hardball in the court. I honestly don't think most Democrats understand how important it is. Of course, shutting the government down for 2 weeks would stop a 40-year Supreme Court justice.
Yes.
I would take that bargain every time. I would play every delay stunt possible for two reasons. One, as much as I'm saying that you can't get it past the lame duck, you can't get through the lame duck, I do think it is inherently more illegitimate for them to push it through during the lame duck. Mm-hmm. And I think forcing them to do at least that will inspire additional people to understand how wrong what is happening now. So to the extent that I need people in the streets, like, forcing them to do it during the lame duck gets me more people
in
the
those streets. Absolutely. Right? I agree.
So that's number one. Number two, I'm all for delaying it because Democrats need obviously a little bit of time here to coalesce around the only solution. Now, again, I've already told you the only solution. It's to expand the court. But the Democrats don't know that yet for reasons passing my understanding. And I need to extend the time. I just basically waiting for the Democrats to get at my level, basically.
Right.
And kind of figure out that the only thing to do is to expand the courts. And so any kind of delay that gets Democrats kind of coalesced around this issue, which I believe would be popular if the Democrats figured out how to message it correctly. So I need all the time possible to get there. So I think we should delay as much as possible. Now, that does not mean that I think Democrats should appear at these illegitimate confirmation hearings that are about to take place.
So
I think the senators should completely boycott them. I think they send, you guys remember during the Kavanaugh hearing confirmation,
mm-hmm.
The Republicans had, and I quote, they called her a female assistant.
I do remember. She was terrible. Right.
I think Democrats should send a female assistant. Personally, I would use Ninth Circuit Judge Pam Carlin as that assistant to go into the hearings, see all their time to a person, have that person engage in whatever delaying tactics they could. And at any point where it was time to ask questions, you want to have an actual constitutional lawyer ask questions.
Mm-hmm.
I mean no disrespect to the Democrats on the Senate Judiciary Committee, some of whom are quite skilled. I mean, Kamala Harris is on that committee.
Well, that's what I was wondering. How about just put Kamala Harris, who is the vice presidential nominee, up there to question her?
But the Harris in this format only has 5 minutes.
But if she's the appointed one,
has great things to say, only has 5 minutes.
Right.
I cannot emphasize, you are not going to trip up Amy Coney Barrett in 5 minute segments. She has been preparing her entire life for this moment.
Yeah.
And the Democratic senators will have prepared for a couple of weeks. It's not even a fair fight.
But
Amy Coney Barrett will say nothing that she does not want to say in 5 minute segments.
And as
great as the Democrats, as some Democratic senators are at using their 5 minutes, not everyone is great at it.
No, they're not. But as they could put up one lawyer to do the questioning, they couldn't just all them, give their time to Kamala Harris.
They could do that. The only other reason why I wouldn't want Harris is because I need the lawyer to do two things. One, ask the questions. Two, engage in really like low hanging.
Yes. Be the attack
political
dog.
Stunt right. making. Right. And I don't want my vice presidential candidate necessarily to be kind of parliamentary procedure. Nazi, trying to.
No, she's got to go. She's got to be the attack dog for the ticket. She's got to go after Pence and Trump.
I like her being a little bit above the fray.
Mm-hmm.
Look, it's not on me to tell the Democrats which senators get to have their 5 minutes and which ones don't, which is, again, why I say nobody gets it.
Right.
Everybody stays off the stage. That's at least fair to all of them. And I'm not in the uncomfortable position of telling, you, Senator from maybe you sit this one out. Like, I can't.
That's a harder sell, actually. Yeah, no, I hear you. Ellie Mistal. So, up until last night, this was the one thing weighing heaviest on my mind. It's like, oh, my God, this is I've got a daughter who just turned 21. I mean, I'm old. I'll get past this, but I've got a kid and hopefully she'll have a kid. And, the country goes on, we hope, but it won't. So we need to fix that. And then last night, another shoe drops, the ninth shoe. And it's the New York Times saying, oh, by the way, we got a hold of Donald Trump's tax records for the last 20 years. This should be for any legitimate president, for anybody with a conscience, this would be finally the beginning of the end. He, of course, does his standard lies. It's fake news. It's a hoax. They don't know what they're, but there. What happens next? I mean, where do we go from here? If he was a normal person, he'd resign.
Right. If he was a normal person, this is the 125th scandal that would have sunk the presidency of a normal person. What I read from those documents, or from the Times reporting on those documents, there are two things that are possible. There's tax avoidance, mm-hmm. which is legal. It's a trick that rich people use to get richer. It's why tax lawyers are so well paid. But it's legal. And okay. So you can read those documents as a legal form of tax avoidance that is kind of embarrassing, but fine. However, if you listen to Michael Cohen,
mm-hmm.
Trump's former lawyer and fixer, if you listen to his testimony in front of Congress, Michael Cohen did not accuse Donald Trump of tax avoidance. He accused Donald Trump of tax evasion.
Yes.
And he accused it in a very specific way. He said inflating or deflating assets on his real estate assets in a way that helps him avoid personal income tax liability. That is Michael Cohen's sworn testimony before Congress. Now, these tax documents do not prove that Michael Cohen was telling the truth.
Mm-hmm.
But if Michael Cohen was telling the truth, this is exactly what the tax documents would look like.
Wow.
Right? If Michael Cohen was telling the truth, this is exactly what you would see. Serious income offset by massive repeating losses that would suggest either the world's worst kind of business person, just a true incompetent level of business acumen, or something fishy. The $750,000 payment from Donald Trump to his daughter of Ivanka for consulting fees, that could be legitimate. It could be exactly the kind of fraudulent transfer to decrease one's tax liability.
Mm-hmm.
The calling of their home in Bedford, New York, which even Donald Trump's kids have said is at home.
Yeah, their summer vacation place, right?
right? Listing it as a business to get out of $2.2 million in property taxes. Like, that could be fraud. Like, so again, if Michael Cohen was telling the truth, this is exactly how Trump's tax documents would look like.
Oh, how interesting. Now, here's another question for you. Are people like Steve Mnuchin and his other sycophants, his hangers-on, his, you know, the people who have his back, could they be considered accessories after the fact?
I don't know about Mnuchin because I don't know what he's been doing at the IRS. Like, honestly, we know that the IRS now officially has been auditing this tax refund that seems completely fraudulent.
It was like a $72 million tax refund or something like that. Insane.
Yeah. So I don't know Mnuchin's role in that. There's a role that could be criminal and there's a role that could be not criminal. And I just don't get to know that right now. But in general, I don't think it's other people in his administration that are in legal jeopardy. His family, sure enough, is.
Uh-huh.
Like his family is all up in these documents, potentially doing some shady deals. And I think that you really, again, have to look. I think you have to go back to the Southern District of New York prosecutors. I think you have to go back to the fact that Bill Barr tried to fire Jeffrey Berman with a press release, and Berman resisted and got his assistant appointed to take his place. Trump wanted to replace Berman with a golfing buddy. Obviously, given what Bill Barr has said kind of explicitly, that all prosecutions are political and he alone gets to decide who. Obviously, there's nobody in the federal government right now who can bring cases or charges against Donald Trump. But man, if he loses.
But there kind of is, though, isn't there? I mean, theoretically, couldn't Nancy Pelosi bring up impeachment charges against both or either or Trump and or Barr? And that would stop everything, wouldn't it? That the Senate would immediately have to stop what they're doing and move to impeachment.
Yeah, they take a day. I mean, it would take them a day. So we have to stop everybody. Yeah, like the Republicans, again, have no shame and do not care.
Wow.
What needs to happen for the law to come for Donald Trump, what needs to happen is that he loses. An analogy I've made online is Julius Caesar crossed the Rubicon. Why? Because he wanted to be dictator of Rome? No, because that dude was going to be sued if he lost his generalship. Lawsuits are waiting for Donald Trump, I believe, after he no longer has power. I think lawsuits are waiting in the Southern District of New York. I think lawsuits are waiting from the Manhattan DA. I think lawsuits are waiting from the New York AG. Lawsuits are waiting for him if he loses. If he wins, all bets are off.
Right. Well, but because of his shenanigans with, you know, trying to discredit the vote, mail-in vote, fraudulent. We've only been doing it for decades in some states. It's all to discredit the believability, the genuineness, the real vote. And we need to stop that now. We need to put a kibosh on that. But that's the question. Who? Because the Democrats seem to be screwing it up. Who can come out and say this has to stop? Or is there anybody? Is there anybody who can save us except us at the ballot box? We all go out and vote.
This is another people in the streets kind of thing. You know, yeah. I've been advocating for people. You know, look, I'm not Republican, which means I don't think granny needs to die in order to win an election. I don't think that, you know, if you're an older person, more susceptible having other pre-existing conditions, and it's safest for you to vote from home, by all means, vote from home. But if you can, if you have the physical strength to vote early in person, voting early in person, even if it's early in person absentee, is just better.
And that's what I'm doing right now.
It's, you know, I had requested my absentee ballot, but my plan now is to vote early in person when my state allows me to, because it's less stress on the electoral system. It's it makes sure that your vote's counted. At least you have more reliance that your vote is going to be there in time. And especially if you're filling out an absentee ballot for the first time, if you do it at the polling place, at the Board of Elections, there are people there that can help you and tell you when you make a mistake. There are going to be at least, you know, I've talked to some election law experts about this. There are going to be at least 500,000 ballots thrown out. That's just going to happen.
Yep.
Right. From people making mistakes and errors and whatever. We're trying to keep that. We want to keep that number under 1 million. Right. We know already from other elections that the ballots that are thrown out will disproportionately affect Black and brown people, but also especially young people who don't follow instructions.
Right.
And who have never done it before.
Right.
So Black people, brown people, and young people, those are three kind of key demographics for a Democratic victory. So, again, if you have any ability, please go vote in early in person. Do not wait for Election Day. On Election Day, Trump is going to have a goon squad out. Like, on Election Day, Trump is straight up going to have, like, voter intimidation tactics upon you. Don't wait for Election Day. Vote early. Vote in person if you can.
Right. And we're over now. So my ballot just showed up today. I will fill it out tonight. I just marked it for Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, by the way. But one thing people need to know is they're talking about naked ballots. You can't have a naked ballot. I've got the envelope that I will mail it in, but there's also what they call a privacy sleeve. When you fill out the ballot, it's got to go in the privacy sleeve, and then the privacy sleeve goes in the mailed envelope, which we will hand deliver to the Broward County Supervisor of Elections office, because that's what we do all the time. It'll be there well before Election Day in Florida. They count them as they come in, so it'll be there. So vote early and do it legitimately and drop it off in person if you possibly can. And you can track it online. You can make sure a couple of days later that they got it and it's counted and you're all good to go. But that's how seriously everyone needs to take this vote. Ellie Mistal, you're the best. I thank you so much for joining us today. I appreciate your words of wisdom and your fired up attitude, because that's what we need. And the Democrats need to hear more of it.
Please, please, please get at my level, guys. I need your help to save the courts.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much, Nicole.
Thank you, Ellie. Always great to talk with you. Really appreciate your time. Bye. And with that, we come to the end of the show, but I see somebody's calling in. So what the hell? Let me take a phone call. Hi, who's this from the 414 area code?
Hi, Nicole. I just wanted to, I had some inside information for you about the people of Craze.
Oh, really?
I'd like to talk to you off air, but I will tell you one thing I'd like the listeners to know is the people of Praise are not associated with the Catholic Church. They are not a sect of the Catholic Church.
Really? But they claim to be. So she claims to be a Catholic, but she's very closely associated with people of Praise.
Right. You can be a part of that organization. And you could be, as long as you believe in Jesus Christ, you could be a Catholic, a Protestant, any other, or Lutheran, any faith. It's a very cultish organization.
Yeah,
I can tell you more off air if you would like.
All right. Well, I appreciate you letting us know. There are a lot of those kind of offshoot, those cultish offshoots of major religions. Look, I find every religion to be a bit cultish. I have no problem with people believing in God and practicing spirituality. My problem is with the organizations inside the religions, the Catholic Church. How much money do they have while people are starving all over the world? That's my problem with organized religion. Pay up. When we moved to Florida, my kid was just going into kindergarten. We moved back here. I really didn't know people. I thought, let me join a temple, not for the religious part of it, but for the social part of it. And it was all about the money, the building fee and the membership fee. And I got so turned off that I said, never mind, we're not doing this. My problem is with the religious organizations, not the spirituality. And you know what? If people are truly believers in God, you can believe in God from wherever you are. You don't need to go to some building and have some guy in front of a big audience tell you how to do it. Anyway, that's my religious beliefs. But I thank you for the info.
Could I speak to you off air?
Sure. You want to hold on? I'm about to wrap things up here.
Yes, ma'am.
All right. Hold on. And with that, we're done. Tomorrow's Tuesday. Got a laugh. We'll be here. So until then, thanks for listening, everyone. And think about taking to the streets, because that's what we need to do. Like, lay down on the streets. Not take, you know, any soup cans to throw or anything like that. We just need to get out there and sit. You know, shut down intersections, sitting there. Now, you know, the governor of Florida, Ron DeSantis, wants to make it legal, if we're doing that, sitting in the middle of an intersection, to run us down. Yeah, Florida, indeed. But this is where this country is headed if we don't take control and get these horrible people out of office. So vote. Get your ballot, like I did, and vote. All right, everyone. I'll see you tomorrow. Thanks for listening. And vote.